This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again, Lucha Lushes, as I'm supposed to say, to an episode of Lucha Undead.
You're contractually obligated to say that, by the way.
Reborn, Lucha Undead Reborn.
Are we still using
the
moniker?
Get to know the PTBN PWO. And this is PWO Edition. Nothing special. We have one of the newer hosts to the PWO. Got his show picked up during the pilot season. Tom Batista from Military Industrial Suplex. Tom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well, guys. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you so much. And now I'm sorry. Adrian, I have you here. And you wanted to rant about some game or something? Let's go.
I just wanted to say, because... You know, I was saying earlier before that we started recording, you can't just own anything anymore. You can't just own software anymore. Adobe has their model. It's a subscription-based model. You know, you pay a monthly fee to own Adobe products, right? I have a game called Destiny the Game. I don't know if either of you have heard of it, but it's basically like a souped-up version of like Halo, right? It's a really good game. I'm not gonna lie. They have some awesome multiplayer. But here's the rub. Here's the thing I take issue with, guys, is that I paid $60 for this game. Okay, when I first got it, right? $60. Now, that's a good amount of money. I don't know about you guys, but that's not, you know, that's nothing to, what's the saying? I don't even know the saying, but.
That's nothing to sneeze at.
Nothing to sneeze at, okay? So then they came out with this update later on, and it was like, oh, if you want this, the expanded pack update or whatever, it's an extra $40. I'm like, well, I don't need that, right? I have the game. I have everything I need here. I don't want to pay another $40, right? So I log in one day to play multiplayer. There's a specific multiplayer mode I like to play in. And guess what? You can't play it unless you buy the update, the $40 update. So like an idiot, I gave in and I paid for it, right? And I'm thinking, okay, that has to be it, right? And there's no way they're doing this shit to me again. And a few months ago, they released another update. And guess what? The fucking multiplayer mode that I like to play in, disabled. Unless you buy the $40 fucking expansion update or whatever it's called. And I think that's such BS that they do that. That's all I wanted to say. It's just greed. It's all it is. It's all about just fucking bleeding people dry, you know, milking the cow for as much as they can. And it really pisses me off. It really pisses me off because it's like I used to be able to just buy a video game and then you own it and you play it and that's it.
Well, that's the thing about technology. A lot of these companies want to make sure, because I actually work in technology myself, so I know that people like to hold on to their Windows XP, and it's 2017, and you're like, dude, why do you still have Windows XP Service Pack 3? Why are you still running Exchange Server 2003? And so it's forcing people to update, because when it comes to technology, as long as it works, because it costs $500, $1,000, whatever you paid for it, people want to ride that technology out into the sunset. And so with video games, because people can be so fickle and just buy the game and not really care about the other gimmicks associated, unless you're a mega fan, what a lot of these companies are trying to do is trying to make these people, such as you and myself, because I experienced this with Hitman, instead of being able to buy just the game right at the start, I have to buy episodes, which is great if I only want to play one episode, which is $10 to $20. Yeah. But if I want to play all six, then I have to pay an installment for all six,
right.
Or I can just wait for the game. And then, of course, they have special features for each of these episodes. So instead of getting, let's just say, $60 from me, the developers of Hitman can now get $120 if they want it. So
exactly.
That price window opens up. But yeah, it all comes down to money and... That's where we live.
Right, and think about it. $60, $40. I've sunk $100 into this game, and they keep snatching away like little features that I like the multiplayer modes that I like to play. Like it's such, like they're just, it's so obvious what they're doing. You know what I mean? It's just so blatantly obvious, and it really upsets me. And for those of you listening out there, get ready, because our current president's pick to run the FCC is going to do everything he can to dismantle it, to get rid of net neutrality, and it's going to come a time probably where the internet is not going to be what it is now. It's going to be, we're like, oh, you want to have you want to watch Netflix and YouTube? Well, you got to pay an extra fee to have the Netflix, YouTube, Vimeo package or whatever, or an extra fee to pay for the Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, social media package. They're going to basically turn the internet into cable. Is all I'm getting at. So just be ready for that, for those of you listening, because it's going to be a rough ride, folks.
I heard someone talking about this, and you know, the Trump wants to do something that has his name, his face on it, and will have a positive sentiment to have his legacy, because it's so important to him to have a positive thing. And it's not like it used to be where building infrastructure was actually building anything. Infrastructure projects now, it's like you don't need to build more roads. You have enough roads. You need to do upkeep. So what if the next step for Trump would be TrumpNet? And what if he gets wireless internet across the entire country? So we don't. So the net neutrality stuff doesn't matter, and we actually all just have free internet, Adrian. I mean, what about something along those lines?
That sounds good, but you don't realistically think that's going to happen, at least not
in the way.
I think
there's a chance. I think that Trump actually, like he might be willing to sell off some other private, you know, private properties or I guess properties mostly, or businesses that the government is involved in to corporate, to the corporate model. But I think he wants to have something to put his name and his face on. And I think that the only thing that's really left right now that people would care about would be that kind of Wi-Fi. And, you know, of course, then in about 5 to 10 years, the TrumpNet would be shit because no one would be upkeeping it, and it would be just completely overstressed by the bandwidth that it was required for it. But I could see something like that happening.
Well, you know, I'm down for the TrumpNet as long as the internet remains as open and free as it currently is. And I'm down for whatever you want to call it, whether it's Trump's name or someone else's name, as long as you don't try to restrict how much bandwidth you have. I mean, there's already somewhat of a restriction on that, but as long as it doesn't get too extreme with what you can do with bandwidth and what services like Netflix and shit, like, you know, the Comcast is like, I read something the other day. They're charging customers an extra fee if they use a Roku player. Have you heard about this at all?
No.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, I don't know if it's Comcast or Time. It's one of the big telecom companies are charging their customers an extra fee if they're using a Roku player to access Netflix and all that. So, that's why I'm saying, like, you know, things are gonna get dicey especially in the next 4 years, though, when it comes to technology, especially. So, just be prepared.
Well, TrumpNet sounds very. No, I was just going to say TrumpNet sounds very ominous.
Yeah,
of course,
it's very Orwellian, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, with alternative facts and Bowling Green massacres and talking about things that didn't happen and getting different views of the inauguration crowd and sides, it's an interesting and unfortunate time. Obviously, we have the land, sea, and air covered. Soon it will be the internet waves and the Wi-Fi covered by Trump.
By the way, the most unrealistic thing about 1984 is the fact that is how competent they are in the book, because that can happen in real life, but nowhere near as competent as in the book, I think. Seriously.
Wait, 1994 WWF, the book?
No, 1984, the sci-fi book.
Okay,
I thought you
said 1994. Okay. I was like, what does Pat Patterson have to do with this?
Yeah, right. That is a good point. But I just wanted to say, I guess the Worldwide Stein doesn't sound as ominous as TrumpNet, though. So
Worldwide Stein.
Yeah. So, Tom, obviously this is not something that's out of your realm of what you talk about on Military Industrial Suplex. You guys are kind of the politically conscious podcast of pro wrestling only. Something I was definitely in favor of when the section of the board was announced that was going to be about these topics that kind of shares the same name, I was all for it. And was even that post that I made about feminism and wrestling still gets comments and added on views constantly, it seems, as people kind of want to chime in about that. So I'm definitely into it. But how about you personally? Obviously, you're on the board. Share with everybody, what's your name on Pro Wrestling Only?
Yeah, so Pro Wrestling Only, Fake Plastic Trees. Someone tried to say Radiohead isn't as big and it's in the bubble, and compared it to Motorhead. I said more people know Motorhead than Radiohead. And yeah, I had to disagree with that. So Fake Plastic Trees, that is my handle. One of my favorite songs.
Yeah, I love that song as well. And so when did you come around on Pro Wrestling Only?
Oh, man, you're making me feel like an old man now. I've pretty much been there since the inception, not really posting a lot, mainly dipping in and out. I think I even changed my handle at one point in time to what it currently is now. But yeah, just been part of the community. I'm very familiar with the stylings of posting, and I can expect when a rant's coming from LP or Parv has an interesting perspective, or Divan comes in with his contrarian gimmick. Some people call it that, but I love him and everyone else. And so, yeah, it's pretty interesting and fun.
Yeah, and so last interview, we went a little bit outside of the kind of the homeland, and now we're kind of back to the really deep, the people who are consecrated in pro wrestling only. You do host a podcast on pro wrestling only now. You guys had a little bit of a personnel switch just recently. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but like, what kind of was involved in putting together the podcast, and what happened there with kind of the rotating co-host, I guess, that you have now?
Yeah. So just starting at the beginning. So Military Industrial Suplex, obviously named after the subform in pro wrestling only. I just wanted to keep true to the name and obviously pay homage to the board where I got the idea from. And I even noted that. So it's not a copyright thing where, oh, no, it's all mine, I made it up. It's not one of that things. You know, I want to bring everyone in. As far as the co-host, Dave, when him and I did the first episode, and we even have a pilot, we have two episodes that we never really released. One is the pilot. We just wanted to talk for 10, 15 minutes, just see how it goes. Next thing you know, we wind up talking for 50 minutes without planning it. And so we knew we had a good thing. Unfortunately, real life comes first before podcasts, and Dave just has a lot of things going on. And, you know, podcasting doesn't really fit into the equation at this time. And so, you know, as I said in one of the episodes, there wasn't this big falling out of people yelling at each other. You're not going to see anything on TMZ. You know, we still talk to each other and text here and there. And, you know, everything's cool. It's just that I feel that when we get a new co-host, it has to be peanut butter and jelly, because these topics that we cover, and one of the things that I try and do on the Suplex is I want to try and keep everything under 2 hours if possible, because some of these topics that we talk about, we can easily cover 3 hours. We can easily go into 6 hours. We can easily have a three-part series that spans 18 hours in total. But we don't want to do that. And so the new co-host, I'm again still on the look, still want to bring people in. I'll even invite you guys on if you want to come, if you want to slum it for a bit on my podcast. Yeah, so, you know, that's where we are right now. Episode 5 coming soon. I actually recorded that a while ago, listened to it again. I wanted to add some things to it. So it's been an unfortunate delay. I have some things coming up with Quentin from Psychology is Dead, and that should be a good one coming up this month. So, yeah, there's just still a lot of things going on, a lot of fires in the poker, or pokers in the fire, I believe is the saying, and yeah, that's where it is.
Nice, nice. Quentin is a past guest, and I've been a guest on his show a couple times, so definitely look forward to that, because one thing I love is not just your voice and the way that it sounds, but your voice when it comes to your personality, the kind of like the way that you approach these topics, you come across in a way that really, you sound not just familiar with the topics, but like you have a lot of expertise and understanding of the topics, even in situations where you're openly saying that you don't, you have kind of the, I guess, the intelligence to be honest and open about not understanding everything from top to bottom, because sometimes you can't. Was that something that was always there for you, and you were like, hey, why am I not doing this podcast talking about these different topics, politics and all this? Or what kind of sparked your interest in wanting to put together this podcast this way?
Well, I love just conversating with people and just having honest conversations. And what I see happen on wrestling forums, which I frequent a lot, sometimes there is that subtext that needs to be discussed. And sometimes people just want to talk about the Hulk Hogan match and not the underlining tones or other factors that may have gone into booking the match or structuring the match that the way it was, or how we consume and digest that match as fans, and how we've been groomed over the years to digest that match. And so whenever someone brings that up, whether it's on Pro Wrestling Only or Death Valley Drive or any of these message boards, the thread is usually derailed because you have trolls and everyone else come in and, oh, we don't want to talk about politics. We don't want to talk about social things. Oh, it's just wrestling, and leave it at that. And any art form, whether it's pro wrestling, whether it's television, dance, whatever it is, there's always a deeper meaning and interpretation and subtext that we shouldn't ignore. Because I believe that when you start taking a look at that, you find out more about the art, you're able to appreciate it more. You also learn something about yourself. And sometimes learning about yourself could be the scariest thing in the world. because you might be an evil person, or you might be, as I said on the first episode, you know, this is not a podcast hosted by a mysterious, inscrutable man or anything like that. And so, you know, I always wanted to have that conversation. I think that's what the suplex is. As far as my stylings are concerned, I don't want this to be a podcast where I come down from the clouds and I'm just handing out life lessons like I got it all figured out. I'm just a wrestling fan. And I know that wrestling fans are listening to my podcast. So this is a comfortable space where we can talk. I don't want this to be a space. I don't want the MIS podcast to be a space where people feel that they're being lectured and said, all right, you have to watch wrestling this way. You got to sit on the couch over there. You got to do this. I want it to be more of, hey, this is what I'm seeing. This is what I think. One man's perspective. Please share yours. Let's have a conversation.
Yeah, that's that definitely comes through. So you do a fantastic job of kind of getting that across, I think, as you listen. What kind of is your background outside of podcasts? Again, you said you work in technology, but you just you have a natural radio voice and and just the way that you deliver everything. I can't imagine that you didn't ever work in any kind of broadcasting.
Well, I did radio in my college years and years ago. I came in for one episode. They just wanted someone to fill 30 minutes. And so I come in to do a pilot. And obviously it's college radio. There's, what, three people listening, if even at that. And I do my episode. It's 30 minutes. And for some reason, I don't know what it was. Again, this was like 10 years ago. And I just go on this rant for like 20 minutes. I don't know. I can't remember what I was talking about. I was talking about sitcoms. I can't remember specifically what it was. And next thing you know, the director's like, all right, that was entertaining, but you sound like you're going to go Howard Stern on us and become a rogue one day. So I guess this isn't happening. And that was it. That was my first and last time doing radio until now, until the last few months, where I started doing MIS and getting into other things. And I actually like, again, just love conversation and talking to people and getting their thoughts on things. So radio is a passion of mine. Podcasting is a passion of mine. Unfortunately, I am in IT. That pays the bills. So, I'm one of those guys. I don't walk around wearing a white T-shirt and a tie, so it's not office space. More like Silicon Valley. If you guys have seen that show, yeah. That's how my job is. That's how I am. The atmosphere that I am. I'm from California. So that's where it all comes from. That's where I am right now. And that's what I do for a living.
Are you in California currently?
I am not. So I am broadcasting in D.C., in Washington, D.C., so the nation's capital. So I'm here. I was here for the Women's March, the protesters. At the Dulles Airport, BWI, Reagan International. They're all close. Got to see a lot of this stuff up close and personal. Wanted to go to the inauguration just for the sheer bizarreness of it all. And I probably would have been in one of those photos broadcasted on the news. And I don't know, that may have been a chance for me to wear a ridiculous hat. Something a bit more, even more ridiculous than Make America Great.
Well, it's America first now, so.
Yeah. That's kind of interesting, too, and you are new to the podcasting side of things, but you have been on PWO the whole time. For those who don't know, I guess you said you're from California. Where exactly did you grow up in California? Or
San Diego.
San Diego.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
Okay, so
Tim loves San Diego.
Yeah, we've had our conversations about San Diego.
Well, the Chargers don't love San Diego anymore. So, but then again, San Diego never really loved them. So, it's kind of huge.
And so, I'm gonna assume you kind of do your thing in San Diego as a child. Around when did you leave?
This was 10. I was 10 years old or so when I left San Diego. Yeah. So, unfortunately, it wasn't. A lot of times when people talk to me or they meet me, they're like, oh, man, I know where you're from. You're so laid back and cool and nothing. Well, not cool as in, you know, whoever the cool celebrity is, but cool as in just relaxed, calming. you know, that type of vibe, real beach vibes. Not necessarily beach bum, but beach vibes. And yeah, been living on the East Coast for quite some time. Moved up to DC about 5-6 years ago. Obviously, this is where all the tech jobs are. So just having fun up here, experiencing life, and just loving it.
Nice. And did you go to school for kind of the technic, doing the IT thing or the technical side of things, or did you just kind of happen into it?
I just happened into it. What happened was, so I went to school for politics and dabbled in radio for one show. And I realized, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this because everyone's going to hate me. But what happened was, for me to get in technology, I just remember standing at a bus stop one day and I go in my pocket. And the only thing that I had was my bus pass, school IDs, and I think my state ID, and obviously house keys. And that was it. I didn't have any money. And I said, man, I can't do this. I gotta start making money. And so I said, well, I can do one of two things. I can continue doing my studies and continue living the life that I'm living and continue doing what I'm doing. Or I can begin leveraging my talents and my mind to something that can begin my career today. And that's what I chose. Next thing you know, I'm doing IT at a government job. And, you know, fast forward years later, and here I am. And it's been a very interesting experience because it hasn't just been IT. It's been a whole bunch of random other things that maybe discuss in a bit.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like kind of where we're going next. So are you still in a government position now within IT, or have you moved into the private sector?
Oh, definitely the private sector. I think a lot of people, when your first job is government, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
I wonder why.
So, yeah, exactly. So first job is government. And I said, whoa, I am never doing this again. The pay is good, but the stress and everything else is completely unnecessary. I feel like I have to be 50 years old and 60 or whatever it may be. And
wouldn't you get like a nice pension, though, once you retire? I mean, at the end of it.
Oh, yeah, 100%. But you have to deal with bullshit for 20 to 30 years before you get to that. So in that 20, 30 years, I'd rather be happy. So.
Yeah, I mean, right now is the time to be happy. Not everybody gets to that end of the line where you're supposedly these are your golden years, especially now. And it's for me, the way I like to live my life, I'd rather be happy now than worry about that as much. Not to say you don't save for the future, right? You got to have
your
backup plans to take care of yourself. But yeah, I could imagine in the government, especially in the tech industry, the way things are moving. And imagine if you were still working for the government right now and we've got, you know, what the current political climate and you're not sure day to day what kind of insane things you're going to be expected or asked to do. I mean, you know, even working in the IT side of things, there's still a lot that could go into that. So, from there, you kind of get into, so, I don't know, you said it's more like Silicon Valley than it is like, I guess, did you say Office Space?
Office Space.
Yeah, I mean, does it come down like the IT crowd?
Am I the guy who tells people to restart their computers all the time?
Yeah, exactly. Are you that guy or do you work around a lot of other tech savvy people?
I work with a lot of tech savvy people. I wish I could just tell people to restart their computers, but I can't in my field. But yeah, I work with a good team. I work with the team that loves to have fun, I hate to use the term work hard and play hard. I've always hated that term. I feel like it's so corporate. I feel like it's
pretty
bad. It's a corporate fundraiser buzzword that is used for people who don't know how to have fun.
The best time I saw that used was in the episode of The Simpsons where Homer wants to make sure that Bart isn't gay, so he takes him to a metal shop factory or something. Yeah. And then like all these guys like start dancing and partying, and he realizes that they're all gay, and one guy's like, "We work hard, we play hard."
I remember that episode for two reasons. One, the pink cupcakes, the hostess cupcake, and the black one. And Homer's like, he's freaking out. And then, of course, they dedicated the episode to all the male steelworkers of America or something like that. The final big dance scene. Because that's how you have to go out.
I like the part where he's like, oh, be nice. Simpsons was really great back in the 90s. I don't know what happened.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was fine. I mean, it's just like anything, you know, you go on for so long. At some point in time, the jokes get old, the formula gets old, but you have to keep doing it and you have to keep being topical. I think the South Park has done a really good job as far as, you know, always staying in tune with the zeitgeist, and they don't have as many restrictions as the Simpsons do. So I feel as though South Park, because they can get episodes out so quickly, they can always be topical. They can say whatever they want. People expect that high level of quote unquote freedom of speech, if we want to use that for a moment. Whereas the Simpsons have a bit of restrictions. That doesn't necessarily mean that because of these restrictions, that means that they can't be great.
Yeah.
Or that, you know, obviously we've seen rated G movies that are fantastic and we've seen rated R movies that are just terrible. So I'm not necessarily saying that the rating system or trying to get all Vince Russo and say, oh, well, they at the top, the board, we can't say ass on TV, so this is the type of product you get. It's not an excuse, but, you know, people burn out. So that's what I think it is.
Yeah, and it's funny. I read that even the South Park guys are like, well, we don't even – we can't satirize Donald Trump. He's pretty much just doing it for us now, so we're kind of done.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys saw that the other day. But.
No, I didn't see it, but I did hear about it in my inner circles. One of my friends said that, and I think that's really interesting. I think it's interesting when comedians feel as though they can't satirize something because that person is already doing the satire.
Yeah.
So you can't really just bring it because then it's an episode of, well, South Park, all you're doing is giving me the news and everything that I've seen, not seen a creative spin to it, because that's exactly how it occurred.
Someone on Reddit said they should just make Trump competent on the show, and that's the twist right there, as he actually does good things and gets stuff done.
And that's the swerve.
The big blowhard that he is. Which is putting it nicely, by the way.
I don't know where I heard it, but I heard someone saying that it was a comedian who was normally known for the same thing, satirizing, you know, the right wing and all that. And they just essentially said, like, unfortunately, again, it's hard to satirize him because he's already kind of a gigantic joke and caricature of this concept as is. But also that, like, it's more important right now. And it's like, rather than trying to do something like that, it's more important right now to just essentially be like, hey, this guy shouldn't be president, and not even try to make light of it, because it's just, if you're going to do anything to amplify the situation, it should just be in a positive way instead of trying to make any kind of joke. So I could definitely see both sides of it, like the idea of lampooning him by having him be a competent figure would be interesting as well.
There's actually a Twitter handle called, I can't remember what it's called, a Responsible Trump or something like that, where they essentially take Trump's Twitter, so whatever Trump posts on Twitter, and they rephrase it and reword it to make it sound more presidential.
Nice.
So let's just take for a little example, let's say Trump says, I don't like those bastards. They would rewrite it and it would read, I disagree with their point of view, but I do want to work with them, and blah, 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 blah. makes it all real presidential.
Nice.
Ah, jeez. I wish that we could just have that. God, I even forgot where we're at. We're getting into the background. So you said you've been in D.C. for about 5 years or so. Yeah. We've mentioned a little bit about watching TV, but I mean, you know, all I do at this point is watch wrestling for the most part. Started watching the Larry Sanders Show with my wife, and I recommend it for people because it is kind of a nice little bubble hearing the Larry Sanders playing kind of David Letterman character, and he's taken jabs at Dan Quayle, and that's the kind of extent of
Dan Quayle.
Yeah, and that's the extent of the. Well, the show came out in the 80s.
Oh, or
like, yeah, the early 90s.
I was gonna say, I said, did Larry Sanders come back?
No, it's the original show. Oh. I'm just rewatching it. I'm saying it's nice to see a time when the kind of lampoonable politician is Dan Quayle,
right?
It's like it's quaint and it's a fun little show. And I was thinking about it about how, in some ways, you know, Gary Shandler created a world where he got the best of both worlds, he got to have his kind of scripted show, and he also got to play Johnny Carson hosting the Tonight Show on the show. So if they weren't going to give him the Tonight Show himself, he got to kind of pretend like he is that guy. So I'd say check that out. But how about for you, Tom? Like, is it a lot of wrestling watching for you? Because I find your podcast, you don't talk about the details of the wrestling matches. I mean, in some ways, you could do your podcast with watching very little actual wrestling. Do you watch a lot of wrestling?
Yeah, I love wrestling. One of the things that I want to try and do on my podcast is I don't want to get too much into the minutiae of pro wrestling. I do want to talk about pro wrestling. It's a really interesting balance because I want to talk about pro wrestling, then I want to talk about the aspects around it. But I don't want to get too far where next thing you know, I'm doing a 10-minute breakdown of a match and you're like, whoa, what was the point of all of this? So, I try and keep the wrestling talk relevant. And so because of that, it may seem small or insufficient in some cases. I definitely want to make sure that I rise to the level. If people are expecting a little bit more, definitely can throw it in. Militaryindustrialsuplex@gmail.com. If anyone wants to send any feedback, it's more than welcome. But it's about finding that balance and trying to keep things under 2 hours, under 90 minutes if possible. As far as what I watch, I love PWG, one of my favorite promotions. I obviously watch the big New Japan show. I normally watch their big shows. WWE, obviously, I think a lot of people watch that and have the network. And so I guess I'm a pretty average wrestling fan when it comes. I try and dive into Lucha when I can. I love Lucha Underground. Try and watch CMLL when I can and AAA. And so I thought the whole Pearl versus Lucha debate was very interesting. A few weeks ago on the board, essentially what it came down to was, hey, why isn't everyone watching Lucha? And what I've noticed in the community over time was that, you know, for Pearl fans, for fans of Japanese wrestling, it was more, hey, guys, I got this tape. This is what I think about it. Here it is. Let's talk about it. Let's have a conversation. Whereas Lucha, for me, when I was first introduced, if you will, is more, hey, do you like wrestling? Well, yeah, I love wrestling. I got this Atlas match over here if you want to see. And I feel like I'm being propositioned at that point in time. So I see that, and I see some other things that I just found really hilarious. But sorry to get off of that tangent. Oh. I'll save that for my podcast. You guys are like, hey, shut the hell up. You need to get this done.
It even made me think. I mean, do you think that there's, because I wanted to get into how you come up with topics, but we'll just kind of skip around it first and go, do you think that there's room for you to do a topic on your podcast about international wrestling? Or do you think that maybe because you're not culturally immersed in, say, Japanese market, that you could really break down the social significance of let's say gender norms in Japanese wrestling? Or is that something that you have thought about or even like would be interested in kind of working through?
I am 100% interested in that. And because, again, I say that I do not know everything, because, here's the thing. I don't want the MIS podcast to be a podcast of, all right, everyone, I figured it all out, and this is gospel from here on out. So, I want it to be a conversation. So I am 100% open to everything. And in a situation like that, I would defer to a wrestling fan who lives in Japan, who understands that culture a bit more, and I would bring them on. And then at that point in time, you would see that the dynamic of host and special guest obviously is there in name, but I am humble enough to defer to that person and maybe chime in with some questions or provide my thoughts, or maybe I can provide, hey, well, this is how things are happening in America. How does that compare to what you're seeing? And then we can talk about the, obviously the Venn diagram that's created, what's the same, what's different, and things like that. So I am 110% open to international topics. So again, if there's someone living in Brazil and you want to talk about transgender pro wrestling midgets, militaryindustrialsuplex@gmail.com.
Yeah, if we could put that together. So then I guess we'll go backwards now. And as I said, how do you come to the idea of doing a topic? Do you kind of base it more on what's, relevant at the time, or do you have topics just in your head and you're going to get to them when you get to them? Like, what's the idea for continuing the podcast going down the line?
It's a combination. Obviously, we just had the Women's March here in D.C., so I definitely wanted to begin the podcast. It's going to be a 2 or 3 part episode on feminism. Obviously, we want to talk about feminism in general. We want to talk about Black feminism. We're going to talk about feminism from the male perspective. Obviously, I'm a guy, so I'm going to give that opinion. But I want to bring a woman on for part two or part three and get a female's perspective on all of this. So how I come up with topics is really about like the whole Jimmy Snuka thing, and this is going to be on a future episode. That really comes down to me about celebrity worship. And I really want to understand, why do we worship wrestlers so much to the point where some people say, oh, Hulk Hogan went on a racist rant. Oh, it wasn't that bad. Oh, this guy, he killed his wife. You know, I'll still watch the matches. Oh, this guy over here did that. Yeah, but man, did he have a great suplex. And I find that really interesting. Again, not to say too much because I want people to actually listen to the episode. But yeah, like I said, it's about things that are occurring, things that I've talked about. There's been times where in the, I hate to say the early days because it's not that long ago, but on the second episode, I sat around and I was thinking, well, what are we going to talk about? And I saw all this nationalism just really start emerging. And I saw all of these people not really dealing with real problems and instead dealing with the abstract and say, oh, well, this is American. You have to do A, B, and C and anything outside of that. And I said, wait a minute, that's not patriotism. That's nationalism. And I started to think about, well, haven't we seen this in pro wrestling before as well? And, you know, so that's where these topics come from. It just comes from what I see and hear people do, what I see online. If I see, again, something where it's like Lucha and Pearl and people talking about that, I really want to try and dive into that because I feel like there's some fire there. Perhaps I can add a log to it. I never want to extinguish the fire, but I like to see what people are interested in, what people are talking about, what is personally, you know, that I'm involved in and how I feel, and go from there. So I think that there's definitely a lot of topics to cover.
And I mean, just for me, just as a fan of the show, and I just want to know, like, what kind of schedule are you looking for? Is it just going to be sporadic going forward here? I know you're still kind of looking for maybe a full-time co-host, but what are you, ideally, is this a show that comes out monthly? Is this a show that comes out every 2 months? Is this a show that comes out weekly? Like, if you had your druthers and it was ideally the way you wanted the show, what would the schedule be?
I always want to create shows that I would love to listen to. And so there's a lot of podcasts like Lucha Undead that I listen to. And I want to make sure that I do have that schedule. So in a perfect world, which should be coming very soon, I will have an episode out every Friday, or at least every week. That is the goal. So hopefully I begin moving towards that. As far as February is concerned, I look to have 2 or 3 out this month. And then after that, again, start going into a more settled approach of, hey, you can find us 9 a.m. or excuse me, not 9 a.m. I don't want people to wake up that early. Well, actually, it's a podcast, so they can wake up that early if they want. And but yeah, just have a set time, a set date, and something someone can set their watch to, because that's how you build a good following. You can't just be, you know, you can't just pop up, hey guys, I'm dropping 16 episodes today. It's like, whoa, what's going on here? So yeah, that's definitely something that's in the pipe. I feel like once I get a co-host, again, having these conversations by myself, it's fun. And I'm and I have good feedback, and so that's good that people aren't like, oh, it's this guy, and turning it off. But again, for my creativity and to continue sparking discussion and to get other people thinking and perhaps get them talking, I feel like it's best to have someone else on. So still looking at a permanent co-host, but the next few episodes after the one that's going to be released sometime next week. After that, going forward, if I can't find a co-host, I definitely want to bring guests in every episode because, again, I love that creative jousting. I love the discussion, and I don't want to be a guy just sitting in my room talking to myself for 90 minutes. I want to be a guy sitting in my room talking to someone else, a complete stranger, for 90 minutes and see what happens.
I have a problem with talking to myself, so I should just start recording it.
Record the voices in your head.
Exactly.
Well, I guess we'll take a break here. Adrian, I don't know if you had anything you wanted to ask before we take a break.
Not before we take a break.
Okay. So we'll take a break here. We'll come back. And I kind of want to get into, I don't know. I mean, we'll see where we go. It's definitely been interesting so far. So I'm not sure where we're even going.
We don't know, but we're going to get there.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And, of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Place to Be Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlaceToBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlaceToBeNation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, so we're back, and Tom, I don't even remember what I wanted to talk about, so it's kind of funny. We've just been shooting the shit off the air during that break.
I had a question.
Yeah, go for it.
So did you mention, and I forgive me if I missed it, but did you mention why you went from LA to DC specifically?
It wasn't my call. It was just my parents, my father and mother at the time were in the military. So It was a military move, yeah. So it wasn't 10-year-old me saying, man, you know what? I really don't like these beaches. I don't like the ice cream parlor on the corner and all these liberals. I got to get out of here, mom and dad. It wasn't that.
So. How long have you been in D.C. then?
For about 5 or 6 years.
Oh, 5 or 6. So what would you say is the biggest cultural difference between living in L.A. and living in D.C.?
The cold. The cold. Weather. Obviously the fashion is a little bit different. There's snootiness all over the world. But I feel the snootiest in LA or California from what I saw. Obviously I've been back since then, so this isn't the 10-year-old me right. talking. But it's a snootiness of coolness of, hey, I'm in the scene. I dress cool. I act cool. Whereas in DC is more of, and obviously, again, back in California, there's a lot of name dropping. Where I feel as though in the D.C. area is snootiness in the sense of I drive a Prius, I listen to NPR, I'm political and things like that. So it's really interesting, the classism, when you take a look at it from both perspectives, the East and West Coast, and what people value and what stands out for them. Obviously, this isn't everyone, so I don't want to paint everyone as a bit with a big red brush.
Right.
But yeah, that's what I see, and that's sort of the difference there.
Is D.C. generally regarded as a pretty liberal city?
Yeah, the mayor of D.C. Is a black woman. Years ago, it was Marion Barry. And DC voted for Al Sharpton when he ran for president.
Huh, that's funny.
So, yeah, so DC is a very liberal city. Obviously, there's conservatives here. There's people of all walks of life. And I think that the reason why DC is so liberal is because if you've ever been to the Northern Virginia area, and this is one of the reasons why I love this area, it's so diverse. It is so diverse. You can easily walk into a shopping mall or, you know, let's just say a local grocery store, and you see Asian people, Black people, White people, Iranians, Pakistani people, people straight from Africa, people straight from South America, and everyone's just shopping. Nobody's, you know, there's no race war or anything crazy breaking out. And it's really interesting when you just stop for a moment and you look at everything and you're like, wow, this is very diverse.
Yeah.
And when you're surrounded by that diversity, because, you know, racism and all that stuff exists, when you don't surround yourself with people, when you decide to stop having conversations, all of that stuff exists until you actually meet these people. And you can't think about that because you see, again, Asian people, Black people, White people, everybody just being normal, just going shopping. Nobody's trying to run a gimmick or anything like that. You realize, like Paul Simon said, cars are cars. In short, people are people. And yeah, that's why I think that's why DC is very liberal, because we're all just living together.
Yeah. It sounds like it would be a huge cultural shock to live there, especially if you're from California, I feel, just because it's just such a different vibe, it sounds like, right? I've never been to the East Coast, so I can't say firsthand. But
well, I'm not from the OC, so it's not like
So
it wasn't an episode of The Hills every day. Yeah, San Diego.
Okay.
And I lived mainly on the Marine base, but yeah, mainly San Diego. And San Diego is pretty diverse as well. I mean, as compared to DC, I would say DC is more diverse. Again, I'm sure there's someone breaking out a map. Well, technically, according to the census, but you know, this is just off the top of my head and from what I've seen and what I remember.
Yeah.
So let's switch roles for a moment. Let me ask you guys a question.
All right.
We're switching roles here. Okay. So this is a hypothetical. There's no right or wrong answer to this. It's just a question I like to ask people to find out if I will ever love them in my life. The question is this. For reasons unknown and unexplained, you have awakened in a tent next to an oasis in the Sahara Desert. There are no other people around you, yet the belongings in your tent signify that you have been living there for quite some time. This is despite the fact that you fully remember your entire life outside of your current predicament. But somehow, all of this feels right. There's a calendar hanging on your wall. And on this calendar, it shows the traveling schedule of caravans of different tribes. And they come to the oasis every week. And they do this as a pit stop during their travels. Obviously, their camels need water, etc. You notice a bright red paper that's sitting on your desk. You open it up, and it's a bill. An estate tax has been levied against your dwelling, as it occupies the only oasis within 100 miles, and Egypt wants to ensure that you are paying for this luxury. So to ensure this, the Egyptian government has also forbidden you to travel outside that 100-mile radius for the next 6 months. This bill cannot be ignored and must be paid. Penalty for lack of payment is death. Distraught with the news, you go outside and you notice that there's three goats by the oasis. This is all still strange to you, but you must gather your bearings and make the next payment within the first 30 days. My question to you is this. How would you go about getting money to ensure that this bill is paid for the next 6 months?
You said there's three goats outside?
You have three goats and you have an oasis. You have a tent. How do you get this paid? This bill for the next 6 months.
My first... caravans show up weekly.
Correct. They show up weekly.
All right.
I would sell goat milk and goat cheese to the people to the caravans that come through weekly. And yeah, that's what I would do. That seems like the most logical place to start if that's the situation you're in and if you can't leave, obviously. So what do you think, Tim?
That sounds good if I knew how to milk a goat and make goat cheese.
You'll learn. You'll have to learn.
I mean,
you have no
choice. Would hope you'd figure it out. What I would say is because I don't know how to do that per se super well, I would probably attempt that while also letting that be known to the people who come to visit the Oasis and maybe see if they would be interested in some crowdsourcing for my estate tax for the next month until I get back on my feet.
So you would ask for a handout. Is what you're saying.
I wouldn't necessarily ask for a handout, but I would say, you know, I've got this oasis that I take care of and make sure it doesn't get poisoned. And I want to be able to stay here. Listen, I've got these goats. I'm going to try to make goat cheese with that. I don't know. But if you want to help me.
That is the longest I'm homeless, please help sign ever.
Exactly.
I would Airbnb the tent. That's what I would do. That's another
Airbnb
thing.
That'd be
another
thing.
I was
thinking about selling the goats as prostitutes, but that just seems wrong.
Oh.
So I have two ideas. So the first idea is I would take the poop of goats and make art and get an art grant from the Egyptian government. This would essentially pay for my housing, etc., because the government is giving me money and all I'm doing is making art out of the goat poop. The second thing I would probably do is I'll just do it like Trump did in New Jersey. I have three goats. This is a farmland, not an oasis. I'll negotiate a tax break for that. Now I only need one goat to apply for the tax, and therefore I'll sell another goat to one of the caravans, and then I'll see if I can hustle for a profit while signing over the deed of the oasis to the other goat. So technically, that goat would get killed as he is the owner of that land and not myself. Wow. If I cannot pay.
And then have the goat's will written up saying that he leaves it to you in a trust so that you're not technically the owner, but you're allowed to. It's the perfect.
And it's a blind trust.
So you sound like more like an economist / lawyer in how you would handle it, which is very out there, and that's nothing I ever would have thought of. So good
it was
job.
Capital. Well, he's a capitalist.
Capitalist.
Well,
you go.
You always have to leverage your goats, gentlemen. Leverage your goats,
and not in a trebuchet.
No,
not that type of leverage.
No, it's just one of those fun questions. You know, I like to see people get creative and see what they would do. You know.
Yeah.
I guess you could do a petting zoo, huh? I wanted to ask you, because you did come to D.C. when you're 10. That's pretty young, and your parents were in the service. And then you said that you went to school for politics. Mm-hmm. Were you interested? Like, obviously, I'm going to assume political science, correct?
Correct. And I wouldn't necessarily say that I was interested in politics, even though at the time I thought I was. It was more I was interested in the power that comes with politics. And once I got into college and I, you know, started debating these issues with people, I realized, oh man, I'm surrounded by a bunch of morons. And of course, that's the young me talking, where everyone at the age of 18 thinks they have it all figured out and that they're going to take on the world by storm. But it became one of those things, and this was around the Bush presidency or so, where I just became so disillusioned, because we see the foundations of where we are now as far as neoconservatism is. We saw the foundations laid during the Bush term, where people began taking these cookie cutter bumper sticker taglines, and they would apply it across the board with a straight face. And a lot of thought was taken out of it. So we saw nationalism moving towards fascism in a lot of senses. And now we see essentially a friendly fascist at play here. And a lot of people are just co-signing, and everyone's in their fake bubble. Everyone's in their bubble, I should say, with fake news and who they interact with. And so everyone's created their own little world where they never have to leave. And it's dangerous, because a few weeks ago or a month ago or so, there was a guy who went to a pizzeria in D.C. with a gun. And he was there to free the child prostitutes.
I heard about that.
Yeah.
That was that whole Pizzagate scandal, right?
Yep, that was the Pizzagate scandal. And that's the dangers of fake news. And this isn't a new thing. This was, you know, a long time ago, it was called yellow journalism. And historians point to yellow journalism as one of the causes of the Spanish-American War. And so to say that these things, these fake news articles, aren't something that should be taken seriously. Just a few weeks ago, it was Pakistan or India, one of these governments that read some fake news about the other one loading up on ballistics or testing nuclear weapons or pointing it towards them or something like that. And so the government responded. And so these are very interesting times, how people are just doubling down on fake news. And you know, like I said, this is all something I don't want to say too much, because obviously I host my own show, and so I can talk for hours. And this is stuff we're going to come into, we're going to discuss about the podcast. Trust me, I didn't forget about Donald Trump. So we're going to talk about his message in pro wrestling, how that has translated. If anyone watched Monday Night Raw or watched WrestleMania, could we have seen this coming? Could we have seen glimpses of, hey, this is how this guy would have ran the country? So that would be interesting to explore. Luckily, I have the WWE Network to help me out, and I have fans who actually listen to the show, thank God. I'm sure they'll send some nice stories and whatnot. And but yeah, so, you know, that's how it all started. Just to jump back to your question, started in politics, you know, just got tired of talking with people about politics. So I started just looking at other endeavors, things that are a bit more creative, something that I actually find fun and not walking around wearing a suit all the time. And, you know.
Do you think that you were kind of, you went along that track or thought that, as you said, you saw the power and all this because you happened to be in DC and you were kind of surrounded by it?
No, I guess it's for me, it just came down to, again, I always felt like I was a know-it-all. I felt like I had the answer to everything. And it's one of those things that in life you have to begin humbling yourself once you meet different people with different perspectives and you say, or, you know, someone says to you, well, Tom, I didn't do this for this reason. This is why I did it. And you say, oh, okay. Case in point, to talk about Trump again. When Trump became president of the United States, the first thing I said is, well, a bunch of racist and deplorable people voted for this man. And while that is true in part, it also ignores other elements that are at play here, where some people felt at the end of the day, listen, I need to put food on my table. Hey, I've been at this job for the last 20 years, and this is all I really know how to do. And Trump said that he's going to allow me to keep it. And so people did what they always do in a lot of elections, and they vote to make sure that food stays on the table. Social issues be damned. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons. I'm not saying that it's a valid excuse, a valid reason. Everyone has their own reasons. Everyone has their own life. But it's one of those things that we find out when we have conversation. And then we can say, okay, now that we have this conversation, how do we build towards a resolution? And so, again, that's why I think it's very important not to, and I try and do this on my podcast. I'm sure people know that I lean liberal, but I don't want to shut down a conservative point of view or discussion from occurring on my podcast. I just want to make sure that when that happens, that we build a bridge and we don't get too far off where next thing you know, someone's spouting something that just flat out 100% isn't true. And I think that is really interesting in living in this area. You learn about, for me personally, because you have this diverseness, or this diversity, I should say, you learn about love, you learn about understanding. And for me, when I started to learn all that stuff and really get a grasp of it on a day-to-day, politics just wasn't my game, because you have to do some pretty heartless things and say heartless things at times to get ahead. And that's not really me.
Okay. No, I definitely agree with that. And I think that you're right. And I think it's maybe not the profession for you, but it's still something that you can be interested in. And someone like you who has the experience that you've had so far and everything that you do have a really intriguing and interesting way to talk about it. So I think that for me, someone who's very committed to these concepts and these, you know, conversations, and I really enjoy them, it's super entertaining. But I think even someone who's not as well versed in political issues, who maybe is more of just a wrestling fan, can also really get something out of the show. Do you feel in any way that it's your responsibility? I mean, I know it's wrestling, and maybe someone like Adrian might say it's just wrestling, and where's the politics? Why are you even talking about this? But do you feel at all that you need to not talk down to your audience, but frame stuff a little bit more simply because you are talking about wrestling in the end, at the end of the day?
I want to make sure that I have a podcast by wrestling fan for wrestling fans. So this doesn't necessarily mean talking down to, but there's a lot of terms that I will use. Obviously, you guys are wrestling fans, so if I say heat or cheap pop or, oh, you know, that person got colored or whatever it may be, you guys would understand. But I also want to have a podcast where you can have your friend who doesn't understand wrestling at all, who says, hey, guys, it's all fake and I don't know why you watch it. Perhaps he can listen to an episode and say, oh, okay, I understand the bigger story, the bigger narrative around pro wrestling that wrestling fans understand. They get glimpses at times. Maybe they don't do a deep dive themselves, but a lot of us understand that there's more to wrestling than just wrestling. Vince McMahon has said this, and other people have said this for a very long time, in that wrestling, pro wrestling, is under the banner of entertainment. And I don't want to get off on a whole it's sports entertainment or anything type of rant, but we realize what pro wrestling is as fans. We realize that there's heroes, there's villains, there's psychology to being a babyface, there's psychology to being a villain, to being a heel. There's a psychology in the storytelling. There's a psychology in the universe. And there's a psychology that we're seeing with WWE, what they're doing now, reaching out to Progress and reaching out to all these other indie fans, this multi-universe that they're trying to create. I think that wrestling in general can do a better job. Again, I want to talk about creating multiverses, et cetera, way down in another episode for MIS. But again, it's one of these podcasts that I want everyone to be able to listen to. I want everyone to be able to digest. I want people to feel as though they can continue the conversation offline, or they can send me a message and provide some feedback. So maybe my opinion is expanded on a certain topic. But yeah, I definitely want to make it approachable. I don't want this to be a, hey, man, I have a PhD in philosophy, so hear me out. I got everything figured out. It's not that.
Well, again, as I said, I would never personally kind of accuse you of being that way because I listened to the show. No, I'm just saying for anybody who maybe hasn't listened to it and they're listening to this as a chance to get to know Tom here. So, you know, it's definitely a show that's really approachable for anybody coming at it. And even if you had never thought about it, it's nice to maybe get your horizons a little bit broadened and look at wrestling through the lens of real life politics, real life social issues, because sometimes you just need someone to say it out loud, and then you go, oh yeah, you know what, now I see that, now I get how this is like that.
Correct. And well, I think it's also important because we need to make sure that, and I see this a lot of times, and I'm going to cover this with Quentin, so spoiler alert for a future episode from Military Industrial Suplex, we're going to talk about racism in pro wrestling. So we're mainly going to talk in that aspect. We're going to talk about Black Americans and Black athletes in pro wrestling. And one of the things that I want to make sure that when we're having this conversation is we have to have an honest conversation. And I feel as though sometimes people feel so trapped in social expectations that they don't get to ask the questions that they really want. Because when they ask these questions, the first thing someone would say is, oh, you're a racist and that's that. Versus, hey, maybe I'm just ignorant and I don't know. There's a lot of people in a lot of different situations. If I asked you, Tim, and I said, hey, I need you to explain quantum physics. Well, if it's your first time explaining it, you might be able to give me somewhat of a gist. And I'll say, oh, you sound like a complete moron. You don't know anything about life. you don't know anything at all, and you just proved it. Or I can talk to you about that, and then you can learn, begin doing research. You have to have an open mind and a whole open heart. Maybe you're not ignorant, or excuse me, rather, in this case, when it comes to racism, maybe you're not a racist. Maybe you're just ignorant. Some people are ignorant and racist, but some people are just ignorant, and that's fine. Because again, there's a lot of topics and issues that I don't know about, that I don't understand, because maybe I never had to deal with it. But it's important always to have a conversation. So I want the Suplex to be a place where we have these honest conversations, because there's always someone out there who's going to say, well, this is what I think. And maybe a conversation between Quentin and myself, or even with you guys, or, you know, Chris Harrington, or Dylan Waco, or whoever these people may be, that people say, oh, okay, I see what it is, because maybe I'm asking questions they want to ask. Perhaps my guests or co-hosts, they're asking questions that other people want to ask. And we have that honest conversation that sometimes people are just too scared to have.
Yeah, I mean, I really enjoyed, you know, being able to feel like I had an honest conversation with you here, one-on-one, actually part of it. But I also really have enjoyed getting a chance to listen to the conversations that you have with others and overhearing it, because it does, again, as I said, comes across, you're very natural, you come across very knowledgeable, you do have a nice voice to listen to, so that does help. But we'll hop to our last break here, and then we'll come back with the final question.
Right.
The PWO PTBN feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
All right, and we're back. And Adrian, you know what time it is.
Final question. Time.
That's it. It is time for the final question. So, Tom, someone who only knows you from the Suplex, which would be, you know, again, because it's such a new show, probably a good amount of people don't know you that well behind the scenes. What would be something about you in your personal life that would shock them?
Well, you said I have a nice voice, so it probably won't shock them to hear that Miss Universe, 2011 or 2012, Olivia something, she said I had a nice voice, and I thought that was pretty cool. I was helping her with a technical issue a long time ago, way back when. Now, granted, it was just over the phone, so if she got to see the full package, I don't think she would say that I have a nice voice. But
I don't know. Maybe we'd be talking to Mr. Universe right now if she got to see the full pack.
There would be no podcast. I would be out in Miami somewhere. But let's see, something people don't know about me. Okay, I used to do music videos. I used to be in the music video industry, working with a lot of indie bands. A lot of the work that I participated in has made it to MTV, BET, MTVU, a lot of the MTV indie channels, the Viacom channels, I should say. And so I think an interesting story is being shut down and worked. So being double-crossed and worked by PETA a long time ago, we were doing the shoot somewhere in Virginia, and we're in this abandoned parking lot. I mean, this place looked totally unsafe. I think we had to cross some police tape, do not enter signs, and like, whatever, we're just recording a music video. And we're working with this rock band, and music is playing. It is blasting. There's speakers there. Obviously, it's rock. You know, this is some screamo or indie band that was just about to get signed, and we're doing a video for them. And this guy just comes up out of nowhere. He's wearing a vest, pleated pants, and he's like, oh, hey, guys, could you guys quiet down a little? We're having a funeral over there. I'm like, a funeral? Who died? And not only who died, but why are they having a funeral out in the middle of nowhere? So we look, so he leaves, and we look over at the edge of the building. We stop for a moment, and we're like, what is this guy talking about? We look over at the edge, and that's the PETA building. PETA's office is right there, and they're having a ceremony downstairs for a dog. And I understand everyone has, you know, their feelings about animals, and I get that. But at the time, it's like, wait a minute, they're having a funeral for a dog. It, you know, let's continue, guys. So we start the music again. We're still filming. Same guy comes up. For some reason this time, he's wearing a different sweater. I don't know what that was about, but he's wearing a different sweater. He comes up. Hey, guys, you know, we're having a funeral downstairs. If you guys can be respectful, we'll buy you lunch. So as a bunch of poor filmmakers, we're like, oh, man, food? Now you're talking. Now I'm listening. And here's the rub. We shut up. We shut down production for 30 minutes. He comes back up, says thank you. He's ordered us pizza. And he, I think he even gives the director an unsolicited hug and like boop on the nose. Just one of those things, boop. And, you know, so food comes. And, of course, it comes from this pizzeria that no one's ever heard of. That's super vegan, super anti-animal, blah, blah, blah. And it's the nastiest pizza I've ever had in my life. It was gluten-free, soy-based, organic, 12 vitamins something. It was just so weird. And we sat there eating the pizza, all upset because PETA worked us.
Wow.
They worked us.
That stuff probably tastes like clay, too, that super vegan stuff. It's not even food.
It was bad. It was bad. There's naked pizza out here. I'm not sure if you guys have one, but there's a naked pizza out here, and they do organic pizzas, blah blah blah, and it's actually pretty good. But wherever they ordered the pizza from, wherever PETA ordered the pizza, it was just terrible. And I'm sure that guy, as we looked over the balcony dumping some of the pizza downstairs, he was getting in his car wearing a different sweater.
Another again. Sweater.
Three sweaters. Three. For one funeral.
Who is this guy? Three. Mr. Sweaters. Rogers.
I don't know. He was the Mr. Rogers, Paul Bearer or something of the funeral, because this guy was fashionable. And so that's one of the stories of my life. It's always stayed with me. So whenever I drive by Peter, and they say, would you like to make a donation? I'm like, actually, you guys kind of owe me lunch.
Yeah, really.
Oh, that's fantastic, Tom. I enjoy that story quite a bit, and it just goes to show a lot of other people may give us answers to this question that are like, you know, one or two quick little things or whatever about them. But I like I like someone who has a nice anecdote that they can share. And you know, it's the same candid conversation that you get on the military industrial suplex. Tom, is there anything else you want to plug out there before we get out of here?
I hope to have you guys on one day. I hope you guys decide to come in. I'll treat you nice. You'll like the setup of the studio, which is digital and over Skype.
Right.
But I hope you love it nonetheless.
Yeah, you'll set it up like your own, like our own house.
It will look exactly the same.
Nice.
It'll be unbelievable.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. Obviously, you can. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. Sign off. No, I was just going to say militaryindustrialsuplex@gmail.com if you guys want to shoot me anything. Also, website, I have the militaryindustrialsuplex.com purchased. Just need to move all my stuff to the new website. You can find Military Industrial Suplex on iTunes and Google Play. You can also find it on the PWO. The Place to Be Nation Pro Wrestling Only SoundCloud. And we should have a show coming up next week. You'll find out more information about that through ProWrestlingOnly.com. So make sure to join the forums. If you already are, then you know where to go.
Nice.
Fantastic. All right, Adrian, anything else you want to get out there before we go?
Yeah, follow me at Della Boots on Twitter. Follow my other podcast at Story Germ, and that's it.
All right, well, you know, follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. You can find all the stuff I'm always working on. And then, of course, the most important things in life are the three B's, which are good beers, good buds, and good banter. Good night, everybody.